Okay, good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here and on time. Just a couple of things. We've got some water there at the back for you, and I think everyone knows how to access the facilities in the hallway if you need to. We are privileged this morning to have Mark McDonald as our presenter speaker this morning, and he will be talking about the four C's: adolescence and how addiction progresses. Currently, Mark serves as the program director for Ascent Recovery Residences in Joplin, Missouri. He serves on the Missouri Credentialing Board for Substance Use Disorder Professionals and is a statewide trainer and trainer of trainers for the Addiction Technology Transfers Centers, and is also affiliated with Teen Challenge, which he'll tell you more about. Mark has some really good information for us and some demonstration, and he is interactive, so he's encouraging you to ask questions. When you have a question, either you'll be handed the microphone so that it'll be picked up by the audio recording, or Mark will repeat the question as he hears it and then respond to it. So let's give Mark our attention and welcome him this morning.
Good morning. How many of you guys like interactive stuff? Okay, that's good, because I don't like to be the only one talking, although I do like center stage, which may sound different, but I like to be in a place where I can demonstrate what God has done. And I think that a lot of us need to be in places where we can demonstrate what God has done for us. I do have a question, though. This is my first national conference for Teen Challenge. Anybody else's first? How's it been for you guys? Just absolutely amazing. Amazing. I'm not going to be able to compete, okay? I tend to be much more a teacher by nature. I love to interact, find out where you're at, what's going on, okay? But to kind of give you an idea of my initial interaction with Teen Challenge happened 40 years ago, whenever I was 18 years old and had the opportunity to go to the Kansas City Teen Challenge and meet some people. The problem with that at that time was that I was still drinking. And I was drinking fairly heavy. In fact, I was drinking somewhere around a fifth a day to two-fifths a day. And I was not going to be a student there. My ego was so big, I thought I could go to work for them. And you guys ever suffer from a big ego? Okay. And quickly got put in my place, which I was very grateful for, not at the time, but later. And spent a long time still working on finding a way to be free from my alcoholism and from the things that were destroying me. Okay? 40 years later, I'm working in Rolla, Missouri, and a guy from Branson West Teen Challenge is seeking some certifications and some education about treatment in Missouri. And he comes into my office, and the relationship with Branson West has been rekindled. I was 40 years out in the wilderness, though, and I'm not sure what the similarity is with 40 years, but according to the program director down there, it's very significant. So I'm willing to listen as to why that's such an important piece. So we're going to talk about the four C's today. Anybody want to take a shot at what those four C's are? I know you got it on your paper, but no? Okay. Well, first one is curiosity. My first question for you is this: how many of you are curious? Okay, how many of you were curious and that's why you showed up here? Boy, are you in for it. Okay. Curiosity is the most natural thing in the world for all of us. We want to know more, right? We want to experience different things. We want to get involved in a whole lot of different things. So when you're talking about an adolescent, do any of you know any adolescents that are not curious about everything? They want to know as much as they can. Why? Why do adolescents want to know as much as they can? Well, that's the hopefully good opportunity for them, but they have an agenda. They want to be independent, and they want to tell their parents that I know more than you do. Some of you have never raised kids. So they're curious about all this, and they want a lot of knowledge. And what curiosity is it's a quality related to inquisitive thinking such as exploration, investigation, and learning. Curiosity is heavily associated with all aspects of human development, and the term curiosity can also be used to denote the behavior or emotion of being curious. But all curiosity is based in one area, and that is in my deficit and my lack. I'm not curious about the things I know. I'm not curious about the things I have. I'm only curious about what I don't. Would you guys agree with that? So we have an adolescent group that feels lacking. No matter how much we try to offer them, they are going to feel lacking. Part of that's just because they're developing. Why do you think the other part of that is? Because they want to connect. Adolescents want to connect. They need to connect. And one of the ways they connect is finding out about what you did or what you did. What have you experienced? What's happened here? What's happened there? So they're asking a lot of questions. And a lot of times, the more questions they have, the more curious they become. You guys discovered that? Now, is that a problem? Can be. Because what it does is it creates this perceived need. I need to experience that so that I can connect. I need to experience this or do that so I can be a part. Is that powerful? You think that's powerful for a kid? I think it's powerful for us as adults. I think we still try so hard to connect that we oftentimes find ourselves doing things that may kind of compromise what we do. So, how powerful is curiosity? Well, I figure it started way back when. We'll go back to Genesis. How did Satan beguile Eve? How many of you guys like the word beguile? Anybody know what it means? Do what? To trick. Yeah, it's to tempt you to the point where I know I can trick you. I got something to offer. I'm going to bait you. Okay? So how did Satan beguile Eve? They had everything. How many of you guys remember what he said?
If you eat this, you'll be like.
Before that, though, God's holding back from you. He's telling you, you can't do this. You got everything except. You think that was a temptation? Why would Eve want except? Now go to what you said. So that you will be like, or that he said, so that you will be like God. And know good and evil. So what drew her away, and how did Satan create a void when Adam and Eve already had everything they needed? And how did he create curiosity? Those are the things we're going to look at. Okay? And again, what calls kids to begin certain behaviors, such as using alcohol or other drugs, gambling, sex, falling into other temptations? Once started, how it progresses and becomes problematic, so problematic that the behavior continues in spite of catastrophic consequences. We're not just talking about experiencing small consequences. We're talking catastrophic. Risk of losing family. Risk of death. Getting kicked out of school. Going to jail or prisons. That's pretty catastrophic. Agreed? So, if they knew that that could happen, do you think they would have started? Why?
Because
It's not going to happen to them. Why wouldn't it happen to them? What did Satan tempt Eve with? And you will be like God. Nobody can touch me. And that's a strong belief system with a lot of kids. They don't believe that they can be touched. And how many of you discovered that it really puts them in a bad spot? So verse number 3, I'm not going to read all of those, but I want you to see what it does. Now the serpent was more cunning than any other beast of the field which the Lord God had made, and he said to the woman, has God indeed said, creating doubt, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? I have no idea why I got 3 and 2 mixed up. And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree in which is in the midst of the garden, God said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. It challenges our compliance. Right? Eve knew she wasn't supposed to do this. Why was her compliance being challenged? You guys know what I mean by compliance, right? Just following the rules. Because she had a whole lot of rules to follow, right? Don't eat from this tree. She couldn't even follow on. What makes us think we can? Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Create something called cognitive dissonance. You guys know what cognitive dissonance is? Big fancy word that means something's not quite fitting. It's got me thinking. And we start recycling a whole lot of different thoughts and we start getting into this rut that goes there. And then it starts challenging our beliefs. Have any of you ever had your beliefs challenged? How many of you have watched kids who were raised in a Christian home and their beliefs get so challenged because of curiosity? The other thing is it creates something called incongruence. Things are not lining up now, and there's a rub. And what's the problem with a rub? Huh? I can't ignore it. Which means not only do I have it up here, I kind of got this rub going on here. And I'm going to have to figure out a way to fix it. So we decide we're going to have a good time. By the way, that's what conviviality basically means, having a good time. So how many of you guys like to have a good time? How many of you don't like to have a good time? Okay, so why is a good time important to us? I have been known to volunteer people.
Makes us feel like we fit in.
With?
Other peers.
With other peers, the crowd. Why else do we like to have a good time? Because it just feels good overall. Absolutely. How many of you guys like to feel good overall? Feel happy, have a great time, all of that. Now the problem is, I was curious before, so I'm not just curious about having a good time. I'm also curious because you told me that if I drank, I could have a better time. Now, one of the problems with us is that we're greedy. We're never satisfied with what we have. Have you ever noticed that? Never satisfied. So I don't want to just have a good time. What do I want? I want a great time. I'm not even satisfied with better. And I want to have the best time, which means I'm probably going to be adding some things to enhance an already good situation. I'm hanging out with my friends, having a great time, discover that if I add alcohol or some other substance, that skyrockets. My pleasure is through the roof. So what do you think is happening to this kid now? And I say kid, but the reality of it is it oftentimes happens to adults whenever they find a spot in their life when they want to experiment with other things. What do you think this kid's feeling now? He's going to want more, but why? It's going to get better. And I believe it's going to get better. So I try to make it better through competition. Now, how many of you guys are competitive by nature? How many of you guys like to watch competitions? Why? You like to see losers? Say again. We want to win, and we love to see winners, right? Gives us hope a lot of times. We discard losers. Well, some people don't discard losers, but for the most part. So we want to win, so we create competitions. I was telling Jeff that one of the colleges in Missouri for frat week sells a book for $25 called 88 Alcohol Games. And it's the rule book for all 88 competitions that they have for drinking games on campus. It tells you the rules, it tells you the disqualifications, it even tells you how to set up the game. How many books do you think they sold last year? A lot, absolutely. Actually, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 700. For 25 bucks a piece. Now, how many of you guys are willing to pay 25 bucks just so you can learn how to play with alcohol 88 different ways? I had one. I didn't need 88. Right? But anybody in here started to say dumb enough to pay 25 bucks for a book that taught you how to play alcohol games? No? Well, that's good to know, because there were 700 college students that were. You sound amazed. Huh? Yeah. And the thing of it is, the college cannot promote, but they will not stop it. College kids are adults, right? Except those that aren't 21. They still shouldn't be drinking. So competition is an act of competing, rivalry or supremacy, a contest for some prize, honor, or advantage, the rivalry offered to a competitor. So how many of you guys have had alcohol or drug problems in your life? Okay. How many of you were competitive with your drinking or using? How many of you at the end of the day wanted to take home the belt to know that you could do the most, you had the best, and you had the best time? Okay. What's the problem with that? Don't we all want to be winners? The winners can become the losers, absolutely. But we don't see a problem with that. We get a lot of adoration for our winnings. How many attaboys did you guys get when you competed and won? You get a lot of adoration. A lot of attaboys from people, even people you don't know, which now tells me what? I belong. The other part of competition is that we all want to be worshiped. Any previous meth dealers in the house? No? Okay. One of the big things down in Joplin is Every dealer who makes their own meth believes that they're the best. That ego and that arrogance that still goes with addiction is powerful there. And one of the problems is they have become God. Because if I have what you want and you want it bad enough, I can demand that you do anything. The one thing competition gives us is power. Now, is it a screwed up kind of power? Absolutely. But it is still power. And to an adolescent or somebody who doesn't know how to handle power, what does this do to them? Blows their head up, absolutely. So now, not only do I have power, but I have superpowers. I am now all-knowing, right? I'm all-powerful, and I'm all that to everybody. Three traits that sound similar. To who? Omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. Who fits those categories? Say again. God, absolutely. So we've, as a result of what they've been doing, they've created this God concept in their head, which is why when we offer a God to them, they oftentimes have a really tough time understanding. Because for them to step down off of that throne is really tough. Which is oftentimes why people have to face such hellacious humiliations that take them off of that throne. So let's talk about our first competitors, Cain and Abel. Somebody tell me about Cain and Abel. You guys don't know about Cain and Abel? Well, you guys definitely would not have understood the Torah then. What?
Sorry, everybody's being shy.
Everybody's being shy. Well, that won't work. But so what can you tell me about Cain and Abel?
Brothers.
They were brothers. How many of you guys as family members competed? Okay. Okay, so what else can you tell me about Cain and Abel? They wanted dad's favor. And not just dad's favor, but his blessing as well as God's favor. Anything wrong with that? Not at all. What else can you tell me about Cain and Abel? One was a farmer, one, well, he raised animals, okay? Okay, so one brought an appropriate sacrifice, the other one did not. What was wrong with what Cain brought? It was the fruits of his labor. What was wrong with his sacrifice? There was no blood sacrifice with it. He wasn't following the rules. And as a result of that, was rejected. Okay? So even in this competition, he just lost. So there are some costs to competition. And we're going to kind of go into that. But anytime you lose, it brings up something called DABDA. Have any of you guys ever heard of DABDA? It just basically is a bunch of letters that add some things. But the first thing that happens is denial. You guys have heard of denial, right? Okay. What is denial? It didn't happen. So I may totally deny it. I may try to minimize it. I may try to divert it. But either way, I'm not going to accept my part in it. Okay? Now here's the crazy thing. Denial is the most natural thing in the world for us. When something happens that our brain cannot handle, we have a mechanism called denial so that it doesn't break our brain, basically. It doesn't devastate us. We work through that. Some people don't. Some people stay in denial for a long, long time. The other thing is anger. Think Cain was angry because he lost? How many of you guys have ever lost a competition and been angry? Lousy sportsman, huh? Yeah. Why do we get angry when we lose? We wanted to win, but we're sad and we're fearful. What are we afraid of? Being a loser, being labeled, being called all kinds of different things, being looked down on, being rejected. There's a whole lot that goes with losing. So we get angry. And then we start trying to bargain. We play let's make a deal. I'll do this, but. Or I'll do this if. And we make all kinds of deals. Any of you guys ever make deals with God? Any of you guys ever volunteer to go to the Congo on a mission trip to bargain with God? I did. It was a bad deal. I'm glad he didn't call me on it, but yeah, it was a bad deal. When we're desperate, we bargain. We try to make a deal to get what we want, right? How many of you guys have ever bargained to get what you want? Yeah, we do it naturally anyway. But in this case, we have to come up with a lot of really good bargains. When we don't get our bargain fulfilled, we get depressed. And then we'll cycle back through that over and over and over until we get to a place of acceptance, where not acceptance for what has happened, but acceptance of my role in it. Why is it vital that I find and accept my role in it? Why do you think that's so vital? Say again.
Healing or moving forward.
So we can heal and move forward? Why else? How can I possibly ask for forgiveness if I never take my responsibility for it? And as long as I can remain a victim, I never have to ask for forgiveness. So when you go to God, you can be angry. How many kids have you seen come into your programs, or even adults come in, that were angry, angry at God? They weren't getting their way. They couldn't accept their responsibility in what was going on. They believed God should have kept them from this. They believed that God should have kept all harm from them, all problems, all those other things. They have a lot of really screwed up misbeliefs. And you guys get to deal with them. They show up on your doorstep because their thinking errors suck. They're terrible. Do you guys agree with that? Okay. So some of the thinking errors: no responsibility for others, lying by omission, diversion, selfishness, no concern about the effects of the behavior, victim stance. How many of you guys ever have people wallow in self-pity? Yeah, that's a big one. Okay. Cain's response lacked remorse for his dead brother, but rather that his punishment was too severe and that he would be killed in revenge. Cain was not remorseful about killing his brother whatsoever. What was he concerned about? His own butt. Because there was a mark on him now that identified him, and he was convinced that he would be killed. Didn't care at all about the impact to mom and dad. Didn't care about impact anywhere other than to himself. The ultimate self-centeredness. And when you're dealing with people, not just kids, but adults also, how many times do you have a really tough time getting them off of that beam about what has happened to them and what's going to happen to them? Because they stay in this state of all this bad stuff instead of realizing the hope of what's out there. Keeps them anchored in all of that garbage. But when we find acceptance, then we can move forward from that. Problem is, if I keep doing the same thing long enough, I develop something called compulsion. You guys know what compulsion is? It's basically, I do what I do because that's what I do. Okay? If I'm hurting, I do it this way. If I'm happy, I do it this way. If I want to have a good time, I do it this way. Chances are, if I've entrenched alcohol or drugs in my lifestyle, that tends to be my go-to. And I develop compulsion. And it's not just alcohol or drugs. How many times have you seen spending be a compulsive behavior? Sex, a compulsive behavior. Porn, gaming. All of those kind of compulsive behaviors. And why is a compulsion so important? Provides relief. Bottom line, provides me some relief. I don't have to feel the rub. I don't have to see what's going on. I can escape everything that's going on. And I don't have to worry about new problems that are going to come up. Because at that moment in time, all I care about is same thing Cain cared about. I only care about me. And this is why we see so many parents walk away from families. Why we see so many kids run from homes that are good homes. It's just not what they want at that moment. And what they want is the most important thing in their life. So it's an act of compelling, the state of being compelled, an irresistible impulse to act regardless of the rationality of the motivation, an act or ritual that a person feels compelled to perform repeatedly, often to reduce the distress caused by an obsession. But I want to kind of go into something called RID. And it's restless, irritable, and discontent. How many of you guys have ever been restless, irritable, and discontent? Somebody tell me about their restless, irritable, and discontent. Recent restless, irritable, and discontent. Nobody's been restless, irritable, or discontent? You guys love the traffic in this area? Huh? When you're driving?
Not driving.
Not driving. Well, I was restless, irritable, and discontent when it took me 2 hours to get from the airport to get here yesterday. Okay? Why was I restless? It took 2 hours. You know? And I'm in a van. I'm in a shuttle. Okay? Why was I irritable? Because it took 2 hours. Yeah, I'm just not getting what I want, right? I'm unhappy. My expectations were way high. I expected to go from the airport to here. And here's what I found out. I could have done that if I wanted to pay an extra $50. I'm cheap. I'll be restless, irritable, and discontent. Okay? But for a lot of people, what restless, irritable, and discontent does is it drives them back into a lot of old behaviors. I'm blessed in that I have new behaviors that I can fall back on now. But there was a time when I didn't. And we oftentimes fall back into it. So all of those lead to a need for ease and comfort. Just kind of off the cuff, how many of you guys like comfort? Okay. Yeah, if it's too cold, what do? Yeah, we turn up the heat, complain. Yeah, you say restless, irritable, and discontent. We put a coat on or whatever, right? If it's too cold, I know, we complain. But we tend to find a way to get more comfortable, okay? When we're restless inside, we want some ease. We don't like that rub. So we find a way to do that. Oftentimes, resulting in a behavior that creates a whole lot of guilt and remorse. Okay? How many of you guys have ever been ate up with guilt and remorse? How's that feel? Internally, how's that feel? Lousy, terrible. We don't have any good feelings about feeling that way. We're miserable as a result of our guilt and remorse. And guess what most of that guilt and remorse is about? Just our failure to control. I wasn't able to control the situation. I wasn't able to control me. Right? And as a result of that, I've got a whole lot of other things going on. But I'm going to make a personal resolve to never do this again. Any of you guys ever failed at personal resolves? Like every January 2nd after January 1st? Okay? We make a lot of personal resolutions, right? What's the problem with personal resolve? It is personal, but most of us don't have the kind of entrenched behaviors that allow us to self-regulate. We don't have those disciplines, especially at the stage that most adolescents are. There are a few that are amazing in their ability to discipline themselves, but there are a whole lot that are not. So, restless, irritable, and discontent. And without a complete psychic change, getting saved, turning life over to God, thinking different, looking at things differently, all of those things, nothing's going to change. Shame, guilt, and denial. Shame, guilt, denial, and blame. This is what Adam and Eve went through. How many of you guys remember what they did? When they heard God coming, what did they do? When they saw each other, what did they do? They covered up. This is stuff they never would have known had it not been for giving in. Okay? Other consequences. So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you've done this, you're cursed. So it's not just the individual who's doing it. Consequences have a ripple effect, a big ripple effect. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow, and your conception and pain shall bring forth children. The sorrow I believe he was talking about is the thing he's fulfilling every day when he's taking the hearts and the lives of our adolescents, and the mothers are weeping, and the sorrow is so in depth that they feel like they're losing their soul because they're wondering what they did wrong, what they could have done different. They question their faith. They question God. They question everything because of the pain that they are in. To me, that is the true enmity that I see Satan doing in the world today. He has put enmity. And what does that have? What's that do to a family? It brings division. What else does it do? It utterly destroys the family. That's a lot of enmity. And the one thing that we have to do is we have to offer a solution. And I'm not going to get through the rest of the slides, but what is our solution? Jesus. We have to offer them something that has enough power and enough hope that they can reach out and hold on to, that can provide them the strength they need for a truly life-changing event. Okay. I've only got about 7 minutes left, so questions. You guys have been way, way, way too quiet. Questions? Please.
Competition is an important part of our American lifestyle.
Absolutely.
How does that get affected by this principle? When does competition become something fun to something destructive?
It's going to depend on the individual. The competition in and of itself is not the problem. But if I'm somebody who feels less than, and I have this urgency to win so that I can get praise or so that I can be accepted, competition becomes unhealthy.
So competition exposes it.
It definitely exposes our weaknesses. That's what competition is designed to do, expose our weaknesses and flaws. Healthy people recognize weaknesses and flaws and do what? They accept them and correct what they can. People who are unhealthy or who are lost or who are really confounded by what's going on see these flaws as rejection, unacceptance, inadequate, all of those bad things. So they have to win just so that they can feel good in their own selves. And it's powerful when we've made self-esteem more important than God esteem, when we've made self-esteem more important than being, because the problem with self-esteem is you quit being a human being, which you were created to be, and you become a human doing, because it's all about performance. And unless I can perform here, I'm not acceptable. Other questions? Well, I don't allow gripes and complaints, so comments. Anything you'd like to share with the rest of the room?
I like how you use the word to explain what you're teaching today. Very well balanced, and you have some really good insight. Thank you.
Thank you. I can tell you that insight comes from a lot of personal trials. A lot of personal trials, but I've been very blessed. God has opened up multiple doors for me to be able to minister, as well as just to work with people that Teen Challenge will never see. God's grace amazes me daily. Okay, please.
When you are working with youth, and you know all this, but it's kind of, I'm kind of wondering if you address it directly or if you just know it, and so then how do you, what's your strategy for connecting?
And I manipulate.
But do you acknowledge that, hey, I know all this about you, or do you just know it and so you have a strategy for helping people?
There are times where I will share insights just simply because they need to know that I know more than they do, okay, because they otherwise they're not going to come back. If they think that they have gotten everything from you, they're not coming back. So I bait them. I manipulate them. But I tell them things that create cognitive dissonance. I want them thinking. Okay? How does this line up with what you say you believe? You tell me you love your family, but everything you're doing's not demonstrating love. You tell me you care about your mom, and you're going out tonight, and you're going to create great pain for her. Because she's going to be up all night wondering where you're at. So does that kind of help? Keep them thinking. Okay? So you had...
In the area of competition, loss equals DABDA.
Yes.
In that acrostic, I had denial, anger. What was...
B is bargaining, making a deal. D is depression. And A is acceptance. Okay? Anybody else? I want to thank you all. Thank you very much.